If you look at a stark outline of part of Norbert Chopik's life, you can wonder if there was a certain air of righteousness, even arrogance about him, a character defect that we can easily find in ourselves. He was born in Czechoslovakia in 1870, a Catholic. In his teens, yearning for more religious freedom, he became a Baptist and was called up on heresy charges by the Catholic Church. He started a church, a Baptist church, which prospered, and his religious attitudes got him in trouble with his Baptist superiors and colleagues. He started another church, the same thing happened. He married in 1890. 16 years and six children later, his 31-year-old wife died in June of 1906, and he remarried on September 9th. He felt there was a need for a brand new religion in his country, and he investigated Unitarianism in America, but he was disappointed with his visit there. He was invited to speak at a major Czech Baptist convention and was received in a lukewarm manner. Dissension grew within his congregation. He broke with his congregation and his denomination. I tell Dr. Chopik's life thus far in stark and abrupt tones. I unjustly make him sound like a troublemaker, a man whose arrogance leads him to critique wherever he is because his views are better than other people's. I did so because I wanted to share the concerns that I felt when I first became acquainted with that first half century or so of his life, acquainted with quotations like this. It will be some adventure, he's speaking of starting a Unitarian church in Prague. It will be some adventure and some fight, and I like fighting. You may not think so because I do not look like the giant Goliath in his coat of mail. Chopik was just about the height I am right now in my heels. He was about 5'4 or so. But believe me, when it comes to it, I hope to give a good account in God's name. I wanted to share my fear that he might be like another forefather of ours, Michael Servetus, who was burned at stake for his beliefs. He was truly a martyr, but partly because of his arrogant approach to the people with whom he disagreed. I know that Unitarian arrogance in myself, and I know it in many of you. I'm not going to make eye contact. I know that our deepest weakness is probably thinking we are better than other people. When the Unitarian Universalist Board fairly recently created a mission statement that suggested we meet the world in humility, using that word humility, we received rafts of criticism for being negative, for using the word humility. I wanted to tell the whole truth about Dr. Chopik, even if it wasn't entirely pleasant. Fortunately, I needn't have worried, at least about Dr. Chopik. I don't know about us. Now, what we can take from the life of this man is inspiration to be reverent, loving, fearless, generous, and connected with God and our neighbor. Let us flesh out and finish the story of his life. His journey through Catholicism, into and through the Baptist faith, and into the Unitarian faith were all results of questioning, often agonizing. Many of us in this room have had to leave a faith behind, and we know that it is a process that involves grief and courage. It was in 1909 that a theologian said to him, "Why, Chopik, you're not really a Baptist, you're a Unitarian." a truth that Chopic acknowledged soon after. For various reasons, though, he did not actually leave the Baptists until 10 years later, until about 1919, entering the Unitarian ministry in 1921. When he did, it was truly, wholeheartedly until death. He and his beloved third wife, Maya, started a Unitarian church in Prague, which became very large. His second wife had died of a brain hemorrhage. The church went through some hard times, as emerging congregations and other congregations often do, got through them, and offered the blessed ministry of the Liberal Religious Fellowship, that was its name, to so many. It was there that Chopic created the flower communion, in which each person brings a flower to worship, and each person takes one away that someone has brought. We do that in June. And he said this, the purpose of it was, quote, to confess that we accept each other as brothers and sisters without regard to class, race, or other distinction, acknowledging everybody as our friend who is a human and who wants to be good. The church and its brave minister were a beacon of freedom and hope as the Nazis occupied Czechoslovakia, which, of course, being a beacon of hope, brought him to the attention of the authorities. The Nazis simply could not allow his preaching of freedom and dignity, and he was imprisoned. The final 14 weeks of his life, when he was 70 years old, were spent in the Dachau concentration camp, where he composed hymns and brought hope and comfort to the hearts of the other prisoners. His heart and thoughts and hopes were always with others, with his vision of a world of free, selfless, loving people. He wrote to his beloved Maya in the early days of his time at Dachau, "Take good care of the religious work we have begun by persisting in the emphasis on positive attitudes toward life and on the building of strong character which can endure all storms and dangers." Precisely this ability is missing in many people who do not understand religion as something more than pious phrases and prayers. On October 12, 1942, he wrote to her in a letter that was smuggled out later, "I can bear the remaining 4 or 5 hours, and I will not be downcast. I will not be downcast, but will rather give myself over to thoughts of you all who are most dear to me, and about your good and happy future, so well deserved, when you will bring to fruition the best possible life, one that I would have been so happy to have lived with you simply, in the fullness of a tried and tested love for others and for God." A few hours later, he and other older and more frail prisoners were picked up by the invalid transport, and they were taken to the gas chamber and gassed to death. We can take so much from the life of Norbert Chopic beyond our admiration and our gratitude for his courage, for his devotion to the principles of a free religion. He was a loving man, finding room in his heart for all of his 9, by the time they were done, 9 children among the many others that he loved. He says this about his children and to his children. "Ah, my children, how much do I owe you? I find it enough that my every word, my every smile, my every song is so influenced by you. We too can remember that love is the basis of all that is good in us. He was a deeply religious man, unafraid to use the word of God, that sometimes controversial nickname for that which is higher and greater than all science and art, harmony with the infinite, soul of our soul, and life of our life. He said, as the sunflower responds to the sun, so the human soul responds to God. We each have a sacred responsibility to find and tend whatever it is that causes our souls to respond as a sunflower responds to the sun. Personally, I take two primary inspirations from Chopic's life and faith. I am upheld in my conviction that reverence, love, and humble faith are the foundation of a good life. And I am upheld in my passionate devotion to the proposition that God without humanity is hollow, an empty shell. In his final letter to Maya, just before he died, he spoke of a tried and tested love for others and for God. For him, the two were the same. How good it will be if that is true for us. If our spiritual convictions and practices always lead us toward more love for each other, more love expressed as a passion for justice. I love his preaching on the nature of our faith. He says, what kind of religion is this Unitarianism? It is humanity lightened by divinity. It is humanism and theism combined. It is not the kind of humanism without God and without a soul, but the humanism of those great men who from time to time called our nation to a new life. The opinion that religion is outgrown can be only held about the religion that was not human enough, that remained under the level of humanity, or remained, so to say, hanging in the sky and could not answer the needs of people in their daily life. I might memorize that better. And I love his vision of the purpose of religion. He says it must be first of all for the heart, should bring a cure for a sick heart, give joy to a sad heart, vigor to a feeble heart, and courage to a fearful heart. Norbert Chopic spent the first two-thirds of his life searching, always serving the higher good as he understood it, but searching for a faith that would allow loving community and disciplined freedom for each of us. He found that faith embodied in our Unitarian religion. He found a faith that at its best embodies love of God and of humans, that encourages selfless devotion. He found his soul in the Unitarian faith, which filled his generous heart with love and courage, even unto the last and darkest hour. Please join me and our readers in a responsive reading of Dr. Chopic's words to close this sermon. It's in your order of service right after the sermon.
In the name of Providence, which implants in the seed the future of the flower, and in our hearts, the longing for people to live in harmony.
In the name of
the highest, in whom we move, and who makes the mother and father, the brother, sister, lover, and loner, what they are.
In the name of the sages and great religious leaders who sacrificed lives to hasten the coming of the age of mutual respect.
Let us renew our resolution, sincerely to be real brothers and sisters, regardless of any kind of bar which estranges us from each other.
In this holy resolve, may we be strengthened, knowing that we are God's family, that one spirit, the spirit of love, unites us, and endeavor for a more perfect and more joyful life. May it be so.